brute force. If it doesn't work, you're just not using enough. You're listening to Soft Web Radio, Special Operations Military News, and Straight Talk with the Guys in the Community.
Welcome back to Soft Web Radio. We have part two with Bob Adams, Colonel Bob Adams, MD, MBA, 18 years in the Navy, 12 as a SEAL, 18 years in the Army, author of multiple books, 6 Days of Impossible, his website, sealhellweek.com. And what's the second book, Bob?
Swords and Saints, A Doctor's Journey. And that's at swordsandsaints.com. That's the book that looks back at 35 years of medicine, Army and civilian, peace and war.
So if you haven't had a chance to catch the first interview, we got into Bob's background, had some connectivity issues on my part. I wanted to have Bob back and just have a deeper conversation and get into some of the stories. It's always interesting in the SEAL community just to see where guys go and the paths they take. And, you know, for instance, Bob, I don't know if you know this, my platoon commander in Afghanistan is Chris Cassidy, who is orbiting Earth right now on the International Space Station, and was a second SEAL astronaut. And then Johnny Kim was a sniper student of mine. Johnny went on to Harvard Medical School and then became the third Navy SEAL astronaut. So,
wow,
pretty wild. Some of us are some underachievers, that's for sure.
And you worked with Admiral McRaven and Hargrave and some really good leaders in your young years that became great leaders in their older years.
Yeah, I mean, I was fortunate enough to come into that kind of same environment you did, the post-Vietnam guys. We still had a couple of those guys around. Half-ass McCarthy was in our SEAL Team 3 training cell. Just some characters, yeah. So it was good times for sure. But I want to get into some of your, the part where you were in the Army as a doctor, got approached by Delta Force, and you said, look, guys, I want to practice medicine and come back in 2 years, which they did. And then you did a tour in Delta Force. But I'd love to kind of recap that and maybe get into some stories you can share.
Sure, absolutely. I mean, it was somewhat unique to show up at an Army post in an Army uniform wearing a Navy SEAL patch on my left breast. And so the word got out fast. There's a doctor running around with a Navy SEAL patch on him. And I hadn't been there long when they knocked on the door and said, come play with us. And I had no idea who they were or where they were, a very, very appropriately classified unit. But I honestly told him, I said, you know, guys, I think I know who you're talking about. I think I know who you are, but not now. And then when I said, come back in 2 years, and they did, I said, you know, now at this point in my career, I've delivered a lot more babies. I've seen a lot more patients. I was a family doc. And so I delivered the babies, take care of the kids, watch them grow up, learn how the Army worked, which was a big deal for me because, you know, 18 years in the Navy and now suddenly in the Army, there's a translation period that has to happen. So I'd learned that the Army had latrines and not heads and walls and not bulkheads. And I was getting a little bit better at it. So I said, sure, now would be a good time. And they brought me in and made me the command surgeon for the Army's Delta Force, which is not a surgical position. As you know, in the military doctors are, their positions are called command surgeon. That goes all the way back to the Civil War days. As a command surgeon, I had a PA that worked for me and another doctor that worked for me and a bunch of 18 Delta medics, which are the top of the cream of the crop of the best trained medics in the military. Even our Navy SEAL guys send them to the 18 Delta medical course, 6 months of real hard training. So I just had a superstar staff working with me and for me. The story I like to tell about coming into the unit was a deputy commander who later went on to be a wonderful major general, close friend of mine, pulled me into his office and he said, pay attention. You know, I'm the chief of staff here and the only job I haven't done on my staff is yours. And I can't do it, can't learn how to do it. So here's how things work. You know, in my unit, we have unlimited resources. You may spend whatever you want to accomplish the mission I'm about to give you. And if you ask for it, I will give it to you because I can't argue with you. I went, okay, this is getting good. What do you want me to do? He said, I want you to take care of my soldiers. I want to take care of their families. And I want you to do it better than anybody in the United States Army. Got it, sir. I can do that. And he stayed true to his word. For 2 years, I spent more money than any doctor I've ever heard of in building up a much better clinic system, remote system, deployment system for the medics, training system for both the unit members and my medics. So it worked out really, really well. And a number of interesting things happened. We can touch on those if you want.
Yeah, no, I would love to. I mean, it's great to hear. And to your point on just the training that the Army has with the 18 Delta course, I had lost my best friend in Benghazi, Glenn Doherty. Glenn was amazing. Just one of those guys that everyone loved. He was a corpsman. And it's funny, in the SEAL teams, you have usually the corpsman that you just don't want to see because they're like, there's no bedside manner. And then the ones that you're just like, oh, this guy's going to really take care of me. Glenn was that kind of guy, and just an incredible, loved what he did, passionate about it. But just, I remember going on a surfing trip with some friends, and this guy, Soheib Qureshi, who's one of the top neurosurgeons in Southern California, went on this trip with us. And one of the guys, we were surfing at my dad's house in Cabo, and one of the guys went over the falls and got impaled on this rock. He was kind of a novice surfer and punched a hole in his back and literally chipped his spine. Like, thank God he didn't have any issues. But I mean, you know, you're with a Navy SEAL combat medic, 18 Delta, long course train, and a neurosurgeon on a surf trip. So it's like, if you're ever going to do that, you're in pretty good hands. But they literally operated on this guy, like got the chip out, sewed him up, and everything. And I remember my friend was like, he was like, damn, like you are really good. Like he wanted to hire him as a PA, and then ended up, Glenn, unfortunately, he was one of the two SEALs that died in the Benghazi incident. But I guess my point is, even the 18 Delta trained medics are, I feel like I'm in better hands with them than most kind of civilian trained doctors that I've been to now that I've been out of the military for some time.
No, I absolutely agree with you. One of the comments that I make in my Swords and Saints book is when I deployed to the Iraq with the 82nd Airborne Division, we arrived in Kuwait and we had to take this long road journey from Kuwait into the bad guy country in Iraq. And I only had me and two other doctors. And I looked at the commander and I said, look, I'm flying myself and the two doctors ahead to Iraq. You guys are going to drive through bad guy country and bad things are going to, could happen. They didn't, luckily. And he went, wait, why are you taking the docs away? And I said, because the medics know that their job better than my doctors know it, better than I know it. Their airway, breathing, circulation. And I need to be set up and ready to receive you should something bad happen. He looked at me and went, really? I said, really? Trust me on this one. The medics do their job better than your doctors do their jobs. And he stayed with me on that, and good things came of it because we sent people out on missions that where things did happen and the medics performed marvelously. And a related story, one of the interesting achievements that we as an expanded and more capable medical system did for Delta was one of my senior medics came to me and said, you know, Doc, I got a concern. We've got, you know, three operational units here in Delta, and we only have a couple medics assigned to each one, and we don't both go on every mission. What if one of us gets hurt? And I went, well, what do you propose? He says, I propose that we train the operators in airway, breathing, circulation. We get them ready to handle me if I'm a casualty. And we immediately implemented. It was a brilliant idea. The commander approved it, put the money behind it. We trained everybody on IVs, tourniquets, advanced medical care. And at 2 years after I left the unit, a 600-pound bomb dropped in Afghanistan on friendly forces. And unfortunately, some of our guys were there. And the most serious casualties were the two medics that were there. And the sergeant major of the unit came to me. He says, Doc, I just need to tell you that you got two medics alive today because of the program that you started when you were there. Our operator saved their life. I went,
Yeah.
And if you're following the news, the Rangers, Army Rangers right now, when they deploy, every single Ranger deploys with a auto transfusion kit in his leg. They now and have actually done in-field under-fire transfusions. If you're an O, I shouldn't say everybody. If you're an O negative blood type, you carry a transfusion kit in your uniform, and they call out, "Hey, I need an O neg. I got a casualty on the ground here." And just recently, they had that happen where the Rangers, you know, while providing return fire, actually hooked their own selves up to a transfusion and gave the casualty blood.
I mean, there's been a couple of the significant developments by medics, right? I forget what, I'm going to murder the name, but it was a SEAL medic that created that, wasn't it like something for a sucking chest wound? It was some type of valve, Asherman or something.
Asherman
like.
Valve, yeah. That's for a pneumothorax, so that's a sucking chest wound. It's just basically a one-way valve. When you breathe in, the air doesn't scoop back out again, and so it allows the lung to reinflate when otherwise it would have collapsed and there's nothing you can do about it. One of my Delta medics also developed something called the Hogan straps, which is used in the UH-60 helicopters for hanging casualties, where you can hang three casualties on the side of the wall of a UH-60 helicopter. Whereas before, when you put a casualty on the floor, now birds fall. He said, wait a minute, we got to be able to handle more than one casualty at a time. So medics are always coming up with a better way. And when you give them permission to be good, they get great.
I mean, you shared a couple of great stories with us last time, but do you have any other stories that kind of stand out at the time and at the unit? And how long did you serve in the Delta?
I was command for surgeon for just under 4 years. And during that time, my services were called for many, many times. And it always started with a eagle down was the code. We got one that was down. And you and I were talking about people that are close to you that have had hip problems. And I'll tell you that one of my more interesting stories was a 43-year-old freefall parachutist doing routine parachuting in our local area. And when, when you're in free fall parachute, you're stable at about 120 miles an hour. And when he pulled the chute, he felt pain in his hip and he went, ow, but any number of reasons you could have pain anywhere in your body at opening shock. But when he flew his chute in, which should have been a nice soft landing right there on the X where he was supposed to, the medic was standing by and he kind of collapsed instead of doing a soft stand up. Medic ran over and said, "What's up?" And he goes, "I don't know, doc, opening shock. I felt pain in my hip and I just landed and I feel it again." And he goes, "Well, let's get you in the ambulance here. Let's run you off to the clinic. Doc will see you." And he goes, no, come on. I'm fine. I'm standing up. I'm walking. I'm fine." So against the medic's better judgment, he says, "Look, I promise I'll go do shoot shakeout and I'll walk over to the clinic." So he lets him go back with the jumpers. Does his shoot shakeout, comes over to my clinic at 5 o'clock. Bad stuff always happens in a doctor's office at 5 o'clock. And he limps in and I do his exam laying down and it feels like he's got a broken hip because the bones crunch when I push on him. But I make the mistake of standing him up to do his x-ray. And because we have a nice little stand-up x-ray right there, take the picture. I look at it and there's no sign of a fracture on his hip. So I go, "Well, I don't care. I don't see the fracture. I'm going to send you to the emergency room anyway." He talks me out of it. He goes, no. "I promise I'll come back in the morning. Look, it's after hours. I got to go. You got to go." And I went, "All right, here's the only way I'm going to let that happen. I'll let my medic drive you home and my medic will pick you up in the morning and bring you back. But you're going to go to orthopedics in the morning." He goes, "Fine." So about 15 minutes later, as I'm putting my jacket up, heading out the door, my cell phone rings. Medic goes, "He's dead, doc. He's on the ground here. He's dead." I went, "Oh crap. I know exactly what happened. He's bleeding internally. He ripped that vessel that circles our hip with us and he's bleeding." And he goes, "What are you doing?" He goes, "I'm giving CPR. I said, "Well, keep doing it." He goes, wait, I got a pulse." And I go, "Great. I'm calling an ambulance to your location now." And he goes, no, I've already called them. I called them before I called you." And as we're talking, I hear the ambulance sirens in the background. I go, "All right. So just stay with him steady. Let him know we're pretty sure he broke his hip. He's bleeding internally. They got him to the hospital, and sure enough, this is exactly what had happened. Where the hip comes together is the pubic bone touches. When you break your hip, you can't break it in one place. You have to break it in two because it's a circle. So it, bam, it pulled the pubic apart when it fractured the right side of his pelvis. And that tears the artery that lives behind that. And it was pumping his full of blood this whole time. And by the time they got him to the hospital, he had a basketball-sized blood clot in his pelvis. They gave him blood. They resuscitated him. He lived. God bless him. And actually did not need surgery. The surgeon said, you know, the hip, that pelvic area is self-contained. So when it filled up with a basketball size of blood, it tamponaded itself off and clotted off. Wow. So, okay, long story short, 6 weeks later, the guy's all better, feeling great, back at work. Same medic sees him in the field doing a demolition work, and he's really pale looking. And he goes, "You okay?" "Yeah, I'm okay. I'm just a little weak, you know, and my stools have been black for the last 3 days. "What medicines you taken?" "Well, I'm still taking that three times a day Motrin the guy gave me after my hip broke." "Oh, crap. Now you've got an ulcer and it's bleeding." And sure enough, we got him in the hospital, had to transfuse him 2 more units of blood. And the reason I tell that part of the story is a month later, he comes in to me, goes, "Hey, will you sign this chit for me to free fall parachute again?" I went, "Nope." "Nope. Almost dead twice is enough. Not going to do it." He goes, "I know you're going to say that. I just had to ask."
Yeah, geez. Well, I remember we called Motrin vitamin M.
Yep. Ranger candy in the Army.
I think this is a good point for you to kind of give the listeners some advice on hip, knee, and back pain, because, you know, we have a mostly male audience, and including a couple pro athletes. I ended up meeting Brent Burns, becoming friends with him. He's an all-star defenseman for the San Jose Sharks, but great player. But yeah, you got any, you're giving me some tips about CBD earlier. You got any?
Big fan of CBD oil. As I take it myself, it's saved a knee after 5 surgeries from a replacement, and I'm expecting to take it into old age, should that ever arrive. And, you know, the under the tongue CBD oil once a day in the morning is an anti-inflammatory, very natural in its effect. I wish I'd have had it when I was with the units. It's a recent phenomenon. It's made from the hemp plant, not the marijuana plant. Yeah. And some of the products that are out there have a 0.05% THC in it. So for people that have to do drug tests, don't buy that particular one, because it actually can show up on a drug test, even though it's physically inactive. But I'm a big fan of that. And it works very, very well for the arthritic conditions that come from sports overusage, traumatic events such as skiing and jumping out of airplanes. It reminds me of 2 other quick orthopedic stories while we're on that theme.
Yeah.
One Eagle Down call was when one of the operators during training was doing close quarters combat training, and he grabbed a flashbang off the back of the guy in front of him. They're going in shoulder, hand on shoulders, pulls a flashbang to throw it, standard procedures, and the flashbang malfunctioned and went off without the 3-second delay and blew his hand off, basically. Instantly cauterized, didn't bleed because it had been basically hot blast burn. Wow. He shows up in the emergency room and he's sitting there looking at his own hand, and the nurse comes up to me and goes, "Who are these guys? You know, there's a guy in there with just bones," and he's looking at him and telling us about what happened. I went, "Well, these are a different bunch of guys, you know." We ended up having to amputate most of his hand, and we got him a artificial hand that worked, because like I said, I had unlimited money. I could buy anything I wanted, and he got the best. But he's the same guy. He showed up about 2 months later, asked me to clear him to free fall parachute again. And I went, "Really?" He goes, no, "I've been in the harness. Look, I can operate the toggles." And I went, "Can you release the safety link on your right, on your left shoulder?" He goes, "How'd you know about that?" "Now, free fall parachuters too, and you can't do it." All right, I had to ask. But keeping that theme of who are these guys, and Brandon, you're a great example of it. I mean, I've read your book, Red Circle, and what you went through, and I really enjoyed the paragraph where you're talking about being your first visitor to the to the med shed after almost an entire training period. And they're going, wait a minute, there's nothing in your record. Who are you? Yeah. And you're a great example of what I'm about to say. You know, this gentleman was rappelling down the side of a 40-foot building, and the rappelling device failed, and he fell most of that way in free fall, tried to do the best parachute landing fall he could, but in the process broke all the bones in both feet. So we got there immediately, got him to the operating room. I was there, and the orthopedic surgeon and I are trying to run wires through, you know, if this is a toe, 1, 2, 3 joints, we'd run it here all the way back through all 10 toes, lining up the pieces, getting them all lined up. Well, to do that at this joint and this joint, that wire's got to poke through the cartilage that we were talking about earlier. Cartilage does not like being disrupted. So the surgeon looks at me and he goes, you know, Bob, I don't know how to tell you this, but this boy's not going to run again. Now, he's not going to walk again without pain. And I went, and he says, and he was a superstar orthopedic surgeon. And I went, all right, I'll pass that on to the commander. And I went back to the same commander who told me to spend all the money I want. And I told him the same story. I said, sir, I hate to tell you this, but your boy's going to heal. He's going to be all right. But the surgeon tells me he may never walk without pain, much less run again. And I remember the commander sitting back like this. He goes, Doc, you don't know what these boys are made of. And 6 months later, that guy ran by my clinic and waved at me. How you doing, Doc? I'm sure it hurt, but he was still, you know, he was back. He was back and operational.
A lot of it is, I mean, you can do a lot. I personally believe when you're under 40, but a lot of us aren't, unless we take care of ourselves, we're just going to, there's lots of things that are going to hurt.
Absolutely true. That's why I went for my swim this morning. You got to keep the joints lumbering, moving, but I'm not going to, you know, I'm not going to put on a 6-pound ruck and run for fun anymore.
It's one of those things. So I've been a part of this community called the Young Presidents Organization, YPO, and I get a lot of these older guys that ask me, hey, let's do a Spartan race. Let's do this. Let's do all this crazy stuff. And my guys, like, I'm like a Porsche in the garage. I want to wax it on the weekends and like take it out for a nice, you know, easy spin around the neighborhood. But we're not doing anything, you know, anything crazy. I'm not putting on a rucksack. I'm not running anymore. I'm doing things that I can do into old age, which is yoga, swimming, surfing. And I think a lot of like my personal philosophy on health and wellness is a lot of, and this is a big whole nother bag of worms, is the healthcare system in America likes to treat with prescription drugs and surgery when oftentimes it's like, if your back is hurting, it's because you're overweight, you're not stretching, you're not exercising. And if you just do those things, get your alignment back, your posture back, you can kind of solve the issue. But you take a pain pill, and the next thing you know, other things start hurting. It just kind of like snowballs into these other symptoms, and you just never recover. You know, you got multiple surgeries now, and you're just like totally fucked for life.
Now, you gave me the absolutely perfect way to plug my book, Swords and Saints, A Doctor's Journey, looks back at 35 years of medicine, and it points out how dangerous the medical system if it's not properly managed. Yeah. And unfortunately, our system is getting worse and not better. And I just retired a couple months ago, partly out of frustration with being unable to protect my patients from the broken system that we all live in. And it is very, very real. The military does a much better job than the civilian world because we're not, in the military, we're not practicing for money. But in the civilian world, we do way too many orthopedic operations that are not necessary, way too many spinal operations, back operations that could have easily been handled by CBD oil and rest and relaxation and physical therapy. So you nailed it there.
My friend that I talked about before, Sohei, was, and he doesn't participate in this, but he was telling me this whole racket of these personal injury attorneys. They get their patients to basically get surgery so they can claim that they, you know, they've been operated on, so they can go to court and get get a higher personal injury settlement. And my friend was like, I just refuse to do it. But he's like, there's plenty of like ortho surgeons and neurosurgeons that just kind of take the money, but the incentives are all out of whack, right? You got different surgical.
COVID for 1 second. A lot, and I want to say this because you're recording it and I want people to hear this. If we as doctors are being told to write on death certificates they died of COVID when we know they didn't. At hospital systems, we're almost all employed now because federal government has removed the insurance companies from the antitrust, anti-monopoly laws. They're not. What the federal government did with good intention was they said, look, we're in the middle of a COVID crisis. So if you've got a COVID patient and we realize you've got to buy other PPE and stuff, protective equipment, we'll pay you more if you're taking care of a COVID patient. Well, guess what happened? All the hospitals told all the doctors, code everybody COVID. And so because we get paid more money for it. When you come in to see me under the old system, I coded you a 1, 2, 3, or 4 level patient. And each level I got more money. 4 was the max. Now I can code you level 4 COVID. And the hospital system makes more money and my reimbursement bonus goes up. And so one of the reasons the numbers are inflated, and even the World Health Organization, CDC, says the same thing, is we're paying doctors to code COVID. Wow. And so it's a broken system that is money focused. And I miss the military peace practice of medicine because I didn't have lawyers telling me what to do or bosses asking me to miscode death certificates so they could make more money.
Yeah, no, that's a great point you bring up. I mean, you know, it's sad. Somebody that has now, I mean, I've traveled quite a bit. I'm sure you have as well. But I go, like, I dislocated my shoulder skiing in Chamonix and I had a great experience and I paid the bill. Like I paid the full bill. Probably didn't have to, but it was like $1,500. They reset my shoulder, x-rayed me, ambulance ride, all in $1,500. That would have been an outrageous bill in the US. And it just, you know, it sucks to think that we're living at a time in America where, you know, we're feeding garbage to our kids. You know, the education system doesn't, I have an incredibly smart, all my kids are incredibly smart. My oldest son is graduating. Tonight, I'm finishing this to watch the live stream of his graduation. But like a 4.2 GPA, computer science whiz kids, perfect ACT score, going to study artificial intelligence next year. He, as a part-time job, we agreed he was going to run one of the investments I made in self-storage. And he's like, Dad, I've learned so much in 2 months about personal finance. Like, how come they don't teach us this stuff in school? Like, how to stay debt free. And, you know, so it's like healthcare, education. There's so much that's broken right now in America. Just nutrition, right? The school system feeds our kids garbage. No wonder they have diabetes and cancer and even the hospital system, right? Like,
we don't teach some of the most basic nutritional interventions that can help people. You know, go back to the COVID for a minute. You know, people have been pointing out that dark-skinned races are dying more frequently from COVID, but we know one of the factors that the reason is they're vitamin D deficient. Dark-skinned races take a lot more sunshine to get the same amount of vitamin D that us pale-skinned folks need to get to have adequate levels, and we're now giving it as a treatment modality. Everybody gets vitamin D, but does the news report, do they teach people how to be well? No, they report the crisis. They don't teach people how to be well. It's not taught in schools. It's not taught in our, you know, in our basic news media, because that's not, doesn't, making people well doesn't sell advertisements. Yeah. So it's, you know, it's a sad and broken system.
I just hope, I mean, thankfully we still live in a country where we can change stuff, but it's, I remember watching, I forget the series, I think it was called The Newsroom, and this guy went on a rant on how, you know, America is not the greatest country anymore. And, you know, I look at my time, Harvard Business School, my friend runs a $1 billion business processing visas all over the world. He's headquartered in Switzerland. He's like, I applied for basically payroll protection relief in Switzerland. It was a one-page document. I filled it out at 9 a.m. in the morning, and by 4 p.m., I had the money in my bank account.
Yeah. I think you might be referring to the 1976 movie Network, where the guy gets in front of the TV camera. Yeah. I'm mad as hell, and I'm not taking this anymore. Like, go for it.
But, God, that COVID thing's interesting. Because, I mean, it does make sense, you know, because I had a friend of mine who's in banking, lost his father. His father was 93, but he didn't have the symptoms of COVID, and they classified him as a COVID death. And the family's like, this doesn't make sense to us. Well, but they couldn't even, like, yeah, they couldn't even, like, check, right? He couldn't even show up for the funeral.
My newspaper this week reported a 100-year-old woman died of the COVID virus. I went, probably not. But
yeah,
doesn't sell newspapers. And anyway, I got to tell one quick Delta and SEAL story. And maybe if we're running out of time, you can close it on this. But one of our compadres that made well of himself from my era was Admiral Eric Olson, our first four-star Navy SEAL. And the day I reported to Delta as the Delta Force surgeon, he reported in as the commander of SEAL Team 6. And we both went to the same indoctrination briefing, looked at each other. We're classmates from the Naval Academy. Go, what are you doing here? He said, I work here. Well, me too. How about that? But the reason I tell that story is every 3 months, the Tier 1 units get together as a team, and they put on demonstrations for congressmen and general officers and of all services to show them what our capabilities are. And almost inevitably, either the Delta Force commander or the SEAL Team 6 commander would come up to me, because I've been there on both sides, and go, so, Doc, who's better, Delta or SEALs? And I said, it always depends on who asked, you know. And the Delta guy goes, they're not as good as we are. They, oh, absolutely not, sir. Couldn't hold a candle to you. And then the SEAL guy came up to me and goes, what do you think? Those Delta guys, they can't do what we can do. Oh, absolutely not. Couldn't hold a candle to you. I played that game with them back and forth. They both knew that without each other, you know, the force was weakened. But the competition never ended. I got a big kick out of that.
That's fine. That's a good story. Well, I think that's a good note to end on. Appreciate you coming back with us for a second time. Would love to stay in touch. I'm definitely going to look you up as I'm flying through on my way back, probably, because I'm going to hit the northern states this summer. But we'll definitely hit the Carolinas on the way back. But yeah, it's been great, Bob. Love to stay in touch.
I'm here for you, so come share one with me. There you go.
Yeah, I will for sure. Yeah, I will definitely. It'll be me and the girlfriend flying back, but it'd be great to meet you in person, and appreciate the time. And you got a great story. So anything we can do to kind of promote the books, let me know. Anything, anytime.
Well, thank you. I appreciate the offer very much. Just put the links out there, and I'll let you know how it goes.
All right. You got it, buddy.
God bless you, sir. Who you are.
All right. See ya. All right. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. I hope you enjoyed that second session with Bob. What a great guy. I mean, guy that served as a Navy SEAL, became a doctor, and then went back into the Special Forces as a Delta Force surgeon and ran the medical program at Delta. And then went on to private practice. Just an incredible background. Glad to have him on the show. Hope you guys enjoyed that. And I'm sure we'll get Bob back and get some more crazy stories out of him. Especially, we only got one IPA deep this evening, but hopefully we'll pump some beers into Bob and get some more crazy stories out of him. Be sure to check out the loadoutroom.com on softrep.com for our outdoor and survival store. If you're not a member of the SoftRep team room, we're running a special right now, 12 months for $12. And that gets you full access to the site, all the video, all the news, full access past forums, chats, events, discounts in the store. We are doing an event series this year. We're planning on doing a scuba diving, hunting, fishing event. And in addition, bringing back the kind of annual SOFREP member party. We'll probably do that either in Texas or Vegas during SHOT Show, if SHOT Show happens this year. And that's it. Great show. Hope you guys enjoyed it. And we'll catch you again soon next week.
You've been listening to SOFREP Radio. New episodes up every Wednesday and Friday. Follow the show on Instagram and Twitter at SOFREP Radio.